Now, the man behind the voice you've been hearing for decades associated with Valley sports teams. It's time for That's So Money with Arizona Diamondbacks and ASU broadcaster Jeff Munn.
Hi there, and welcome to the latest edition of That's So Money, the podcast that you find right here on this here website, sports360az.com. I'm Jeff Munn, and we're doing our podcast today from Brad Sesmat's show studios. And we thought it would be kind of a nice change of pace to come have a home game for a while, so to speak. Quite a few things have transpired since the last time you and I visited, and I really don't know where to begin. And this is just the great thing about podcasts is you just do a lot of stuff off the top of your head. I really don't like doing scripted stuff as a broadcaster because I don't think it sounds very genuine or sincere. I understand that some broadcasters do it that way, and that's their comfort zone, and I certainly respect that. It's just not something that fits for me. So this is winging it in its highest form because I'm doing 15 minutes or so on this podcast without anything, any kind of idea where we're going. But I am going to start by talking about the Olympics in this respect. First of all, I'm not a big Winter Olympics fan. I just don't watch the Winter Olympics for a couple of reasons. The sports don't intrigue me that much. They used to, but I just don't. I don't get into it as much as I used to. I really don't watch the Summer Games that much either. But I had the grand honor many, many years ago, 18 years ago, of participating as an announcer at the Summer Olympics in Atlanta. So every time the Olympics does come on, it does bring back some memories for me. And I just want to tell you a couple of things about the games in general. Number one, when you watch the games on television and the telecasters, the broadcasters talk about the camaraderie between athletes from differing nations and that cultural differences are put aside and everybody stands hand in hand and arm in arm. It's true. It's real. I can tell you this from personal experience. That kind of atmosphere, that kind of mood really does exist among the athletes at the various Olympic villages and the games that have transpired over recent history. So it's not just a put on by a TV broadcaster. It really does happen that way. And someday if I write a book, I'll tell a lot of stories about what I saw with my own eyes at the Summer Games in Atlanta. I guess I can share one thing very quickly about my experience with the Summer Games. And you'll remember those were the games where things were interrupted by the park bombing in Atlanta in the midst of the games. There was a great deal of tension in the first 24 hours or so after the bomb went off. And this is pre-9/11. I mean, we didn't have that much experience with terrorist attacks. And so it was very hard for people to gauge really how to react, what to do. There was a lot of questions as to whether the games would continue. And the decision was made very quickly overnight that, yes, we're not going to stop. We're not going to let whoever planted this bomb stop us from doing what we want to do. But the thing that I will always remember about one of the very funny stories, and there was some humor about it out of the tragedy and the loss of life, there were some unusual things that went on. Each day, I would have to walk by the CNN Center in Atlanta, and the CNN, the building that houses CNN, has a very large food court down in the ground floor, and a lot of people who couldn't get hotels were actually sleeping overnight in the food court at the CNN Center. Well, once the bombing occurred, CNN was in lockdown because they thought maybe they were a target. So all these people that had basically were living in that food court were taken out. They couldn't be there anymore. So a lot of them had to end up sleeping on this bridge outside the CNN Center, which had been closed to vehicle traffic. One of the groups of people that were out there on that bridge was a steel drum band, and they would play on and off throughout the day. And one of the things that the CNN people did to kind of help out because they felt bad about having to move people out of that food court was they brought a huge projection television out to the bridge. The Cartoon Network had just signed on the air about 3 months prior. And so they put the Cartoon Network on this huge screen so people had something to watch when the games weren't going on. Well, after about two or three days of that, I walked by one day, and the steel drum band that camped out there quite often was playing the theme from the Flintstones. It's a sound I'll hear in my head probably for the rest of my days. But great stories, you know, and it's one of those bucket list things. If you ever have a chance to go to an Olympic Games, go. Spend the money. It's expensive, yeah. It's held in remote places around the world, but if you ever get a chance, you have to do it. It's simply a phenomenal thing to be a part of and take hold or take in as a spectator. What else is on my mind? Oh, yes. One other thing related to the Olympics. If you have a chance to, if you're watching the TV coverage intensely, I am not. There's a gentleman that you need to keep in the back of your mind, and the television industry owes him a tremendous debt for the way sports in general, but the Olympics in particular, is covered, and that's Rune Arledge. You may be familiar with that name. He headed up ABC Sports for years and years and years. And through the 60s and 70s, ABC was the Olympic network. They did the Olympics most often. And it was Rune Arledge who developed the concept of profiling the athletes and telling their stories before they went out to compete. The biggest difference between the way Rune Arledge covered an Olympics and the way NBC covers it is, for a long time, NBC would pay attention only to the Americans that were involved in competition, and they really didn't say much of anything about athletes from other countries. I think it's changed a little, but not terribly much. The other thing that I will say about NBC's coverage, and it has bothered me, I watched a little bit of the opening ceremonies the other night, and they were trying to justify, I thought, the commentators were talking about the size, the geographical size of Russia, and why it is so important to have a near dictator in Vladimir Putin at the head of the country, because it is such a big country, and there are so many different factions of people. And I was a little uncomfortable, number one, with doing political commentary on what is essentially a sports broadcast. And the other thing is, I was a little uncomfortable with NBC trying to justify what goes on in Russia. They have not totally progressed from the days of the communist regime, and there are still things that go on in that country that our government does not agree with. I also found it interesting that John McCain was very upset with Bob Costas for some of the things he said, almost in sympathy toward the Russian government. And McCain said, Costas should just stick to sports and stop talking about politics. That's the line you walk when you televise an Olympics. Sometimes these Olympic Games are going to be held in parts of the world where there are governments that do not agree, or we're not in agreement with, over how things should be handled. And it really puts a huge bit of pressure on the broadcaster who pays for the right to come in and televise these games. How do you handle that? Are you blunt in your assessment of what goes on in that country, or do you go the other direction and basically try to make it all sunshine and happiness? It's not easy, and I'm not being critical of the NBC people for making a huge mistake, but I was a little bit uncomfortable with how they were trying to make it sound as if, well, there's a reason that you have to have a leader like a Vladimir Putin. For two reasons. One, it's really way out of their area of expertise for the sports people. Brian Williams wants to talk about it. That's one thing. But sports people, don't like that too much. All right. The other stuff. ASU and the U of A will play in basketball on Friday night. And you may be listening to this podcast after that game has been played. I think ASU is at the point now where they have gotten enough wins and should get a few more to get into the NCAA tournament. I am hopeful that they will make it as competitive a game as possible. You can never go into a game against the number two team in the country, even at home, and say, well, we're going to win, we should be favored, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I do hope that they give the fans in Tempe a really competitive game. Now, having said that, I want to comment a little bit on the Marcus Smart situation and a little bit of a tie to what took place Saturday in Tempe. And I'll start with the Tempe situation first. If you remember, or you may have heard this, after the game with Oregon on Saturday, a student fan, reportedly spit on an Oregon trainer and an assistant coach. Now, ASU dealt with it immediately. And that student was identified, his season tickets were revoked. I got to be honest, there's a part of me that wishes they'd gone a little farther, because that kind of behavior is simply unacceptable. And these are college students. You know, they don't have the best judgment in the world all the time. But more should be expected out of college students than you might expect out of high school students. The other thing I find encouraging is I'm assuming that part of the reason they identified that fan very quickly is because other people in the area pointed him out. And it is a student section, and what that tells me is the other students who have really done a very nice job establishing a home court advantage for ASU didn't want to have anything to do with this guy. And I'm encouraged by that, too. That tells me, hey, they're not going to put up with this. They don't want to have that kind of reputation attached to them. So I was pleased with that. But this also gets into the whole subject of fan behavior and what rights do fans have. I personally, and I'm not certain that what we've heard about this fan at Texas Tech is 100% accurate from the standpoint of, I really don't think he limited his comments to calling Marcus Smart a piece of crap. I'll bet it was a trifle bit stronger than that. And I also, and because of that, I just find just calling him a piece of crap by itself is just despicable. And I don't think it should have come down to that fan, I believe his name is Jeff Orr, voluntarily staying away from Texas Tech games. I think he should have been kicked out, and I think he should have been told don't come back, not just this year, but ever. There's just simply no room in sports for that kind of behavior by a 50-year-old man. Sadly, you kind of expect it to some degree from college students, as we saw Saturday with a student, just singular, spitting on an Oregon assistant coach and the trainer. But 50-year-old man? Seriously? Much better should be expected of this gentleman. He is he should not be held up as a representative of what Texas Tech believes in from its fan base, and he should be told that he's no longer welcome ever at these events, if that's really what took place. Now, there were also stories that he used a racial epithet at or racial slur at Marcus Smart. And if that's the case, you know, I got to be honest with you. When I hear these things, I never get really upset with athletes for reacting the way they react when they hear those kind of things. There's a part of me that feels like Marcus Smart, you know what, if he lost his composure for a moment because a fan called him the N-word, you almost forgive him for it because it's just despicable to use that kind of language toward another human being. And I understand that as representatives of the university, they need to be held to a high standard in terms of their conduct. But at the same time, what in the world are we coming to when people feel the need to utilize that kind of language at a student athlete, a college basketball player? It makes no sense to me. And it's especially troubling because there are so many examples of really fun conduct by students. Sunday, I went down to ASU's women's basketball team, which was ranked 11th in the country at the time, went down to the U of A to play Arizona. And Arizona's had just a really rough year in women's basketball, 0-11 in the Pac-12 until Sunday. And they got a huge upset of ASU, winning 68-49. ASU just didn't play well at all. As the game was ending, some of the chants from the student section and the band, none of them were malicious or nasty. They were fun in a way. Now, I wasn't laughing because my team got whipped. But the way the students conducted themselves, as far as I could hear, you couldn't find any fault with the way they acted. And there are just so many examples of college athletics and college fan bases being something to be celebrated. As I said, ASU student section, the 942 group, they're phenomenal. And I'm certain they don't want to be associated with this one individual student who decided the proper way to react to Oregon was to spit on them. So it's troubling to me to see where things have gotten in this day and age. These are not isolated incidents. A few years ago, during a women's basketball game, the game referees kicked an ASU student out for things that he was saying. And, of course, there's that infamous incident with Steve Kerr in the late 1980s, which nobody is happy about that took place. And we don't have the time to go into it here, but I'm sure if you follow either one of those programs, you know what took place. And it just, every once in a while, fans take a little bit more license than they really should with their rights as ticket holders. Yes, when you pay money to go to a game, you have a right to do certain things, but you don't have complete freedom to say what you want, to act the way you want. Just buying a ticket does not give you that right. And it's unfortunate that schools get tagged with this kind of reputation because one fan steps out of line. But for me, for my 2 cents, in both cases, I'm glad ASU revoked the tickets of the student. And I would really like to see Texas Tech do the same with the gentleman who called Marcus Smart a piece of crap. I really would. All right, we have run out of time. Next time, who knows what we'll talk about, because one of the beauties of this podcast is we can go wherever we want with it. So I appreciate you tuning in. Be sure to check out the rest of this website. And remember now, Brad's show is now also simulcast on azcentral.com. So thanks for checking us out, and we'll talk to you soon.